Hello, welcome to your meditation practice as part of the Open Heart Project. My name is Susan Piver, and I am delighted to sit with you in meditation. We're going to sit together today for 10 minutes. We're going to start very soon. I'll just say that you may not be used to this particular setting, but this is my home, and I've decided to go back to making these videos in my home for a variety of reasons, one of which is I miss my cats, who will make appearances from time to time in the videos. So, as you get settled, you can sit on a cushion on the floor with your legs crossed loosely in front of you, or it's completely fine to sit in a chair. And if you do sit in a chair, please sit with your feet flat on the floor. Hello, you. Hi. And as you get settled, I want to share with you a question that I've been asked to answer. A month or so ago, I put out a call for questions or topics that you might want to hear covered. And I got amazing responses, very moving questions. Thank you. And if you have a question or something you'd like covered in one of these videos, just leave it in comments, please. I will do my best. So this question I've chosen for today, as I speak, is November 2nd. November 6th is Election Day in the United States, midterm elections. And I think this question, even though it's not about politics or elections, is relevant. And I'll read it to you, and then you'll either hear why I say that or I'll be happy to explain it. So this is from Joanne. Thank you, Joanne, because in many ways, this is the only question. So, she says, we normally go along in our lives happily, and then a death occurs. Sometimes we know it's going to happen, and sometimes we don't, and we are shaken. Either way, we are shaken. Now, the widow, mother, sister, or friend, we too are transformed in some way. We might not have been here before to this depth. How do we keep it together, going through the fire of transformation, if that is what it is? What is keeping it together? Oh, so many questions, Joanne. Joanne, those are really great questions. As I say, they are perhaps the only questions. And whether you have lost a loved one or fear losing a loved one or are going through some kind of a trauma, as I would say many of us are going through, not because of losses we're used to, like people leaving us or something not coming through, but many of us are traumatized and experiencing a sense of loss as the citizens of our country. I'm not saying which political party is feeling it, because I think everybody's feeling it. Everybody is feeling some sense of, where am I? Which is what you feel when you've had a traumatic loss. This is not what I thought. I thought I lived in this kind of place or had this kind of life or was this kind of person or had these kinds of neighbors. And now I see that I was wrong. I don't know where I am. I don't know what's going on. So whether, again, it's because of loss of a loved one, loss of a relationship, loss of a sense of home, being at home. This is a particularly precious, painful, and fraught moment. And the Buddha Dharma / our meditation practice is custom made. It is, you could say, specifically designed to help us at these moments when we don't know which way is up and we're suffering. So if you're watching this on Monday, November 5th, the day it goes out, it's going to be an intense day. Tuesday will also be intense. So what do we do when we don't know which way is up and we're overcome with feelings of dread or anxiety or just sorrow? So I find this question so potent, so central, that I wrote a whole book about it. It's called The Wisdom of a Broken Heart. And having a heartbreak doesn't feel like, if when your heart is broken, you don't feel particularly wise. You feel awkward, you feel you don't like yourself. You don't know how to put one foot in front of the other anymore. And you don't know how you're going to go on. There is no minimizing that pain. I wish I knew some Buddhist trick, but I don't. But there is something powerful about those moments where we can no longer figure out where we are, that are central to the spiritual path. So we go through our lives. This is a very broad statement. I go through my life. I'll use myself as an example. I won't make assumptions about you. Basically with this sense of, how am I going to game this? How am I going to game my income? I don't mean I'm trying to cheat anyone out of anything, but how do I position myself? How do I strategize? How do I make the right plan? How do I become the kind of person who it can do X, whatever X is, have a good relationship, not worry about money, have the friends I want, live in the kind of place I want? You're always kind of strategizing. It's pragmatic, it's sensible. We have to strategize. It's a complicated world, got to have plans, got to be clear. I'm not saying that there's a problem with those things. However, there are times in our life where we have no more strategy. We have no more game. Game has left the building. Those are the moments when our hearts are broken. We cannot game such moments. In other words, there is no strategy, no formula for making those moments disappear, or for discovering, well, actually everything is okay, even though I thought it sucked. No more formulas. In the Buddhist view, when you arrive in a spot where there are no more formulas, which is always true, by the way, it's just we/I pretend I have formulas. But when you come to a point where you are absolutely clear, I don't know how to manage this. I feel helpless. I don't know what to do. Again, in the Buddhist view, that's considered fortunate. Powerful, perhaps, is a better word. Because when you're in those moments where you have no game, all of your strategies have fallen apart, all you can do is be there with who you are, exactly as you are, on the spot. Also in the Buddhist view, that is called being awake. It seems like a crazy design that the moments that are most painful seem to be the ones that push us into the moments that are also the most wakeful, but so it is. So this does not make anyone feel better, I totally understand. But there's something powerful, empowering, about knowing that you can stand in a place where you don't know which end is up and you have no idea what to do, and remain awake and open and present. As I've been taught, that's the enlightened state. That is being awake, not thinking about the past, not thinking about the future, but you're right here. There's wisdom in that. When our heartache begins to recede, which it will, whether it's about a country or a person or a relationship, we forget how to be awake. But when the moments that come that shake us the most, we see that there is only one choice, and that is to be awake. / feel. Feel what you feel. Feel the sorrow. Feel the discomfort. Unless, and this is a very big unless, you are coping with trauma. This does not apply. So if you are experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder, which I myself have, as I think I mentioned last week, don't push yourself. Don't think, oh, some Buddhist lady said I'm supposed to sit here with my discomfort. No, meditation can actually be harmful in those situations. Barring that, barring the situations where your limbic system is just completely lit up and you cannot talk to it because you can't talk to a limbic system, barring such situations, there is some utility in sitting with the anxiety, the not knowing, the feeling, not the story of the anxiety and the not knowing and the feeling, which is, I feel this way because of that, or if only this hadn't happened, or if only this does happen. Great, okay, good. But those are thoughts and stories, some of which are completely true and useful, but not the same thing as feeling. So on this day, if you're watching this, November 5th or November 6th, or any day you happen to be watching it, let's begin our practice with the recognition that actually all we are doing is sitting here being awake. We're not trying to get anywhere. We're not trying to be someone else. We're just with what is. Our thoughts, our feelings, our sensations, which we just allow as they arise, abide, and dissolve. Having fun down here? We allow all that. We sit with it. We practice being awake with exactly who we are right now without any effort to change. Something powerful in that. Let's do it. In our practice, there are three things to be mindful of. And the first is our body. So we begin the practice by building the posture from the ground up. So your legs are crossed loosely in front of you, or your feet are flat on the floor. The hands rest, palms down, just above the knee or at mid-thigh. Really give your weight to the cushion or chair. We're not trying to float or go away or be somewhere else. We're just right here. So you can have a sense of, I just landed, if you haven't felt that already. The back is straight and strong as a kind of proclamation of your dignity and capacity to be here with what is. At the same time, the front body is very soft. The belly, the chest, the throat, open, because they just are open. These are three gates with which we communicate with our world, the gate of intuition, the gate of emotion, the gate of speech. They seem to be 24/7 situation here, open all the time, but we can relax with that because we have this strong back to support us. The shoulders are relaxed. The chin is tucked a tiny bit, so it's basically level with the ground. The mouth is closed, but the lips and teeth are slightly parted. And the breath is natural, in and out through the nose, meaning no breathing technique, because you're already breathing anyway, so. Carry on. The eyes are open. And the gaze is cast down to a spot in front, 3 to 6 feet. And let the eyes be very soft. And instead of trying to laser focus on one point, with your holding your eyes steady and soft, let the whole visual field in without trying to pick anything to look at, if that makes sense. And if it doesn't, ignore. Let the brow relax. And the crown of the head reach up a little bit. So this is mindfulness of body. Next is mindfulness of breath, which means not focus on your breath. Doesn't mean notice your breath. Doesn't mean observe your breath. It means feel your breath. Your body is meditating, not your thoughts. So feel the gentle expansion on the inhale and the release on the exhale. It's so simple. You're just breathing and feeling that. Stay with the inhale. Stay with the exhale. At the end of the exhale, the next inhale will automatically happen. So the amount of effort you need to invest is zero. So when are you ever invited to invest zero effort? So please enjoy that invitation. And this is mindfulness of breath. Finally, we add mindfulness of mind, which means we allow our thoughts to be as they are. Most of them will come and go. They'll sort of float by like little clouds. They won't really distract you from your breath. It's fine. You don't have to do anything about those thoughts. Don't try to make them go away or change them or fight them. Just relax with them. And should you notice that you've become fully absorbed in thought to the point where you've forgotten about feeling your breath, at that point, we want to intercede with four little steps. First, notice. Oh, I'm thinking. Got it. Two, let go. The quality of letting go is like just you're holding a piece of paper and you let go, as opposed to you're crumpling it up and throwing it away. Just let go. Three, come back. Gently escort your attention back to the breath. Four, begin again. Notice, let go, come back, fresh start. That is mindfulness of mind. So we'll sit together. Thank you so much for your practice.
Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for practicing with me.
You too.
Thank you for practicing together. And may all who suffer from anxiety and grief be soothed by the companionship of friends. And I'll just mention, if you're watching this on November 5th, on November 6th, which is Tuesday, I'll be leading a meditation live online on my Facebook page. It's going to be a loving kindness meditation for the United States, for everybody. Doesn't matter what your political party is. But if you are around at noon East Coast time, please join me. Thank you.